This is episode number 164 of the Well-Fed Women podcast. Welcome to Well-Fed Women. I'm your co-host, Noelle Tarr, a nutritional therapy practitioner and a certified personal trainer, and I'm joined by my bestie, Stephanie Ruper, author of the best-selling book, Sexy by Nature. On the show, we provide moderately amusing banter, authentic, unfiltered conversations relating to nutrition, fitness, mindset, and body image, and offer empowering advice for women from women. While you're listening, please keep in mind that the information on this podcast is intended to provide helpful and informative material and should not be used to diagnose or treat disease. We are so excited to have you here. So now let's have some fun. Hey, Stephanie.
I don't sound like I, but I do apologize. I will do everything I can to keep my coughing and my sneezing and my nose blowing away from the podcast. I cannot protect you from my gravelly voice, although it's not that more gravelly than usual. So I think we're going to be okay.
You know, it's cool, though, because you can be sick and we can hang out. And I don't have any fear of getting sick from you. So you're not spreading any germs to me.
So that's actually really, really good. Positive. It's been a little isolated over here.
I bet. How long have you been sick? Like a week or?
Almost a week, yeah. Okay. To varying degrees, you know. The first thing I felt was a fever. And to be honest with you, most people I know like really hate fevers, but I was like, I'm pretty chill about fevers. For some reason, I kind of like them, actually. So I was like, all right, I got a fever. Woo. but now I'm like, now it's all the like congestion draining stuff. And that's less fun because it interferes with sleep mostly. Yeah. And the library, everybody like turns and like, you know, side eyes you every 4 minutes.
Oh man. Yeah. That's no fun. Do you have a cup of tea or something beside you at least? Or
I am. Yes. I made a cup of tea, which is why I was 2 minutes late.
Were you? Didn't notice.
No,
I don't know if you ever noticed, but I'm always like at least a minute or two late. I can't help it.
Yeah, I know that we normally have that cushion, so I figured the tea was okay.
It's always a couple minute cushion. But then I realize, like, I have to be professional. I don't really have to be with you. But when I am managing, you know, my wonderful people that work for me, and I'm like, hey, let's, or like when I was doing interviews, I'm like, okay, let's meet at 8. I'm like, I really actually have to be there at 8, like probably 7:59.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, you do.
Yeah, because that's what professional people do.
Are you? You can't treat everybody as cavalierly as you treat me.
Yeah. Are you a person who is always on time, a little early, or a little late?
I am always on time unless I'm in a situation in which I know that the people will be not on time or flexible about time. You know, like I'm one of those people who finds it to be like horribly rude if you're late.
Yes. Like a personal attack, yeah.
It's a little bit less so now, because I just like literally everybody's late all the time. I account for that. But in my previous life, when I was like go 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 and very very scheduled, like if people were running late on me, I was like, what? Excuse me. Still kind of feel that way.
I'm sort of the exact same way. I actually can't stand it when people are late. When it's like if it's like a group thing and some people trickle in a little late, I don't, like, not at all. I don't care. Because I know people have lives and kids and, you know, things, traffic and things just set you back a few minutes. But if, like, we are meeting somewhere at a restaurant and you show up 15 minutes late, it, like, I can't get over it, you know? I can't enjoy the actual meal because I'm sitting there thinking, you literally probably left your house when we were supposed to meet. Yeah, I don't know. For me, it's like, I feel like it's just a disrespectful. It really bothers me.
I know. So. And then, like, I know a lot of people who are like, well, other cultures aren't like this. I'm like, well, ours is.
this is America, okay?
Yeah. Seriously, you know, and some people say, actually, like my best friend is chronically super late. Mm. And because she's such an extraordinary person and know that the reason she's late is because she's taking care of other people. I'm like, I'm chill about it, you know. Last night for dinner, she was 30 minutes late.
Ugh.
And I was like standing there, looking out the window, and I'm texting her a lot, but I'm not texting her like, where are you? I'm like, are you okay? Because that's the nice way to be like, where are you?
Passive aggressive. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep.
No, but I really was concerned. And then it turns out like she had a friend with a thing, and then she fell off her bike on the way here. Anyway.
It's always something, right? That's my thing.
That's true. It is always something. In this day and age, like, usually people are late because, like, their Uber driver messed up. Like, that's normally, like, 90% of the time now that's the thing, which is kind of nice. Or, like, if you live in a city that doesn't have a subway, God forbid, or you live in a city with an American subway system. I'm such a European elitist about subways and public transit in general. I can't. When I'm in the States, I'm that person who's like, it's so much better in Europe.
I'm sure it is. You know, the only place that I've never had a problem is New York City. I feel like it's quick.
New York City is full of problems.
But for me, and I know it is for people who like commute, you know, regularly, but I've never had a problem in New York City at all different times. Even when we stayed for like a week straight, it was, I guess I'm comparing it to DC and also Philadelphia, which is just a cluster. It just doesn't, there's no, it's just like, oh, this line is not working today. Like, sorry. So, yeah, but I know.
Okay.
I know. Lots of issues. Yeah, trains being late. Like, my situation with Amtrak just couldn't take it. Like, I could not take it that they were an hour and a half. We arrived an hour and a half later than when they said we would. Like, it's unacceptable.
But, to get from Detroit to Chicago, they say, takes 4.5 hours on Amtrak. Actually takes 9. I've never personally, and I've never heard of somebody taking less than 9 hours to get from Chicago to Detroit. Yeah. Which, by the way, everybody, is a 4.5 hour drive.
Yeah. Yeah. The other thing I hate, we're going off here, but the other thing I hate is when people say that they don't have time to do something. Because everybody's given the same amount of time, and to say that, so you have time. You have the time. You're choosing not to apply the time towards something. So a lot of times when people are asking me for advice or wondering, you know, I don't know, we're just in conversation. Oh, I just don't have the time. I'm so busy. I got no time. And I'm like, well, we all have the same time. It's just, how are you dividing up your time? What do you choose to do? If you have an hour to sit on the couch and watch TV, you have the time. You're just not choosing to do it. If you have the time to, whatever, pick up the phone, order food, wait for it to get there, you have the time to make a quick meal. Like, it's not, you know what I mean?
So you're talking about people who make excuses for doing things for their health specifically?
Maybe, but also maybe not. Just things in general. Like, I don't have time to read a book. I don't have time to, you know, whatever. Go to church.
Well,
I don't have time to go here.
I think it's shorthand for saying I have otherwise scheduled my time with these priorities and I don't see a way to fit that in without cutting something else out. And I'm not sure I'm going to be able to cut something else out.
Well,
like, I get that, you know.
Well, to say that you don't have the time is just to say that you don't want to. So to me, it seems like a really terrible excuse. Like, oh, I'm just, see, this is the thing. And this is the underlying thing. It's like people perceive, there's like a sense of like, I'm super important because I am too busy. Like, I have so much going on, so busy. I have these kids and I have this job, and I get it. Like, you have a lot going on, but if to me, it's just like, okay, well, then you don't want to. Like, you know, and that's fine if you just don't want to say you don't want to. But to me, it always comes off as this like elitist, like, oh, I don't have the time for that. You must have more time than I do. You must have more extra time on your hands. It's like, I really don't.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's the, yeah.
Yeah, there's definitely a culture in the West, especially in America, of like wanting to, you like show off your busyness.
Yes.
Cause that's something that is to aspire to. Cause that means that you like work really hard and you're productive or whatever, like useful. And I definitely find that obnoxious, you know?
Yeah. That's only become more obnoxious to me as I've gotten older. I don't know about you, but I used to always say that when I was a little younger, in my 20s. But now it's just really obnoxious because you can see what it actually I guess.
It took me a while to figure it out, you know, like to figure out what was going on there. But once I did, I was like, oh, okay, I don't want any part of that. And please get over yourselves, everybody. mostly.
Stephanie Ruber, ladies. Stephanie Ruber.
But, yeah, I don't know. It's just, it's really unfortunate. Being busier doesn't make you a better person. I totally understand if, like, in a heart-to-heart conversation or your sincerity, you're like, man, I'm feeling really overwhelmed and I should really, like, think about my priorities. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. There are so many people in the world who are way too busy. Like, seriously, like, it's a legitimate problem.
Yeah, you know? I know.
We're way too scheduled. I think of, like, a normal work week, like a 40-hour work week. Sometimes when I'm working really hard, I'm like, man, that's nothing. And other times I'm like, man, that's so much. Mm-hmm. We schedule so much of our lives, and that's really hard and really unfortunate. Yeah. But on the other hand, like when you take on so many things, it's just, and feel the need to like announce it, I'm like, okay.
Right.
Romeo, you know.
Right. Like, well, it's like assuming that not everybody else is also struggling to balance their time with all of their other obligations. That's my problem, is like, you think that I don't feel the same. Like, my husband has two jobs. I have a job. We have a kid. We're also trying to manage many other things. It's not like I'm oblivious to what it means to be, you know, busy. It's just like that, and that's the attitude. And you're right. It's in our culture. We've now become this society where we praise the attitude of, oh, I'm just like being overwhelmed and being busy. It's something that we almost, you know, we look to make ourselves busy. There's a lot of other things underlying there. I think when people when they add too much to their plate, they're trying to ignore or avoid certain other areas of their lives, or dealing with certain emotions or hard circumstances. And so they kind of use their busyness or use all of these things to distract themselves from what is really, you know, a pressing issue in their lives. But it is really, it's just become this thing that people kind of see themselves as above others because they have all these things they're doing. So it's just like, okay. But I get what you're saying. Yeah. Bye. Okay. Bye. Just say you don't want to do something. Like, it's fine. I get it. Like, oh, I have another obligation. And that's what I say. I'm trying to get out more folks and do more things. And it's hard. It's hard with a kid, a small kid who is unfortunately not super happy when she goes out a lot. And so I have to really plan my time out wisely, and I'm trying to do more like groups of other women my age, and I don't know, be involved more in the community efforts and just put myself out there. And so that's been a little bit of a challenge. Like, I could say, well, I don't have time for that. I'm, you know, I'm writing a book and I'm like, you know, recording podcasts and I'm a mom. And but it's, you know, it's not true. I have time to do it. I just need to, you know, section my life out in a way and put myself out there. So that's what I'm doing. Woman up.
Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah.
Anything new with you and paleo for women?
Still no announcements. Still sitting on things that may become announcements.
Okay.
Okay.
I have something pretty exciting. I was actually, so to the Today Show is what I watch in the mornings. It's when the Olympics were on, I would turn on every morning and catch up with the Olympics. But my grandfather was a big NBC fan, therefore my father was, therefore I am. So we watch the Today Show in the mornings. That's our worldly, our global news, I guess you could say. And they were doing, Maria Shriver was doing interviews with companies that were having, you know, I don't know, really moving forward with social change. It was this company, I think it wasn't called SoundCloud. It was something interesting, but the guy who was running the company has really actually changed the needle in terms of some political efforts because of his, like, how he runs his company and how he cares for his employees, and really is just, I don't know, you know, moving forward with equality and all these things. And then they also interviewed a woman, an African-American woman who is running a school in, I think, in one of the roughest neighborhoods in Brooklyn. And she's She calls all of her kids scholars, all the children in the school scholars, and is like totally changing the face of education, which, as many people know, if you have kids, education is a big topic, and it's really, really hard to think about putting your child through an educational system if you don't necessarily agree with the things that are being taught. Anyway, I digress. Future conversations, I'm sure. But then she also is interviewing Greg from Beauty Counter, and I like did not, this is not something that I knew. And she was like, and I'm interviewing Greg as well from Beauty Counter, and that'll be airing on Friday. And I'm like, no way, this is so cool. It's so cool that I get to work for a company. I'm sure that that's, you know, moving forward and being recognized for social change, but I thought it was really cool. So I'm going to probably link to it in the show notes if I can find a link to it. I'm sure the Today Show is going to cover it or do some news clips. But she is really an awesome individual and is doing a lot for trying to get, like, moving forward with political change, trying to get safer standards for beauty care products and actually get some things passed that will make it safer, not just for, you know, what Beauty Counter chooses to do, but for the industry at large. So really excited. I'll probably link to that in the show notes. I'm going to get into questions, but I want to talk about our sponsors really quick. So Thrive Market is still a sponsor. We're really excited to have them as a long-term sponsor. Y'all, you have nothing to lose to give them a try. We'll probably talk about them a little bit more, you know, as we go on and things that you can find. And I'll probably start providing some helpful tips and things that I'm purchasing and things that have made my life easier. That link is thrivemarket.com/wellfedwomen. And Universal Standard, I talked about them last week. They are an awesome brand that has taken the women's fashion world by storm. They offer modern, minimalistic essentials in size 10 to 28, an underserved and often overlooked size range. They're all about style, fit, and quality. They use premium fabrics. I have some of their clothes. They're amazing. They're high quality. They're designed to fit women who are size 10 or bigger. They have everything from workout gear to casual to dress clothes to awesome coats, which is my thing that I can't get over. I have all the coats. We love Universal Standard because they believe that women of all sizes deserve to feel good about themselves and have great fashion. And they have this really new program, really cool new program that I mentioned last week. It's called the Universal Fit Liberty Program. And you can exchange any piece from their core collection if your size changes within 1 year for totally free. So you don't have to wait until your size changes before investing in specific pieces for yourself. You can buy for what you are now and then, you know, drop that guilt and shame that sometimes the industry likes to send our way for buying clothes that fit our current size. And then if your size changes, you can just swap it out. So in support of the podcast, they are offering a $50 T-Rex for totally free. It's a core, beautiful T-shirt that's part of their core collection. Universalstandard.com. What you need to do is just add a purchase to your cart. So if you're going to get something, make sure it's at least $50. Then add the T-Rex to your cart. It's T-T-E-E and then Rex, R-E-X, to your cart. It's that what the T-shirt name is, basically. And when you use the code WELL, that T-shirt will be completely nixed out. The price will. And it'll be totally free. So just shop at universalstandard.com. Use the code WELL, W-E-L-L. When you check out and you have a T-Rex in your cart, and then that'll be free. And your minimum, you have to have a minimum purchase of $50. Follow them on Instagram too. They have a lot of cool stuff that they're doing. I think it's one of those really cool, I know Steph and I talk about this a lot, but it's one of those really awesome brands that are doing so many good things and really supporting women of all shapes and colors and sizes in their marketing and what they do and, you know, who they are as a brand. And they have a lot of cool things that they promote and talk about and conversations that they start on their Instagram and stuff that they're doing in their stories. So it's one of those brands that I really love to just have in my feed. I feel like it really starts me it gets me thinking differently, but also gets me, you know, as a part of, I don't know. It to me, you just have to offset some of the stuff. And look, I know Steph and I talk about this a lot, and now I'm going on a tangent, but we talk about removing things that are not serving you in your social feed. Sometimes there are people in your social feed that you learn from, but also still post things that are like, okay, like, I don't need to see this, or this is a little bit triggering for me, or yeah, this is another mirror selfie of your abs. And it's not to say that that person is bad, and I don't want to say that you should not be following anybody who posts photos of themselves in their bathing suits or whatever. Like, this is, that's not a problem. It's really about where it comes from. And so I have a lot of people that I follow that aren't necessarily completely body positive or not dedicated to being body positive. And so I think it's just nice to have a variety, you know, have a variety of people, a variety of brands, a variety of missions in your newsfeed. And I don't know, keep it balanced, keep it balanced. So definitely not all about just cut out everything that makes you feel, you know, or kind of is like, oh, well, I don't know about that. Like, thanks for showing me that, but that doesn't make me feel too great. I mean, I'm at a point in my life where that is, I'm okay keeping that in my newsfeed and I can learn from other people. I think there's a lot of educational brands that still have this underlying attitude of, you know, weight loss is always the goal. And, you know, I'm happy that I can be a part of that and not necessarily be triggered by it anymore. But I think that I'm able to keep that balance because I do have a balanced newsfeed. And it feels kind of weird right now that I'm talking about balancing your newsfeed. But that's kind of been my recent thoughts. Let's be honest, how often do you really get on Instagram? But when you do, are you still kind of engaging with some of the brands that maybe aren't so, you know, that are still about weight loss? I mean, I don't know what you've done.
I do zero, actually zero looking at Instagram.
Okay.
Zero. And I always have. The number of times that I've scrolled through Instagram in my life is probably like 6.
Wow.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't like it. I don't like the medium. I like words. I don't understand the picture thing. I think it's weird. I don't like it.
I completely, this makes sense to me. I don't know why I thought anything different.
yeah, I like words. It's just the same thing. Like, I do it for y'all because I love you, but I don't understand audio and visual media, like videos and like a podcast. Podcasts are fine. You know, it's just, do you know how much quicker it is to read a PDF than it is to watch like a 15-minute YouTube video? Like, why? It just feels so inefficient to me. I'm like, it would take me 24 seconds to read this. Literally 24 seconds. So anyway, no, I do not Insta. But I definitely like, you see, people complain about social media all the time and, you know, how people are making them feel bad by posting all these awesome things about their lives. I don't know. I think we should just curate our friends. My social media feeds are usually pretty great, actually. And the Insta thing, I definitely, like, it's so easy to find toxic stuff. Like, it's just there. You know,
it is. Just, you're right. You're right.
It's because it's trying to get your attention and it's mm-hmm. the really popular stuff. So if you look at like what's trending, it's there, right? It's always there. And I'm just like, no, like we don't need this. And living in a place like Oxford, you know, it's not like living in Florida or Southern California. Like, I'm in Oxford and people here like study mm-hmm. and don't work out much. I mean, they do. But you know what I mean? It's just like, I love living in a place where people just like don't prioritize that sort of thing. And it's wonderful to like be around people, like find people, surround yourself with people who just like don't care. Mm-hmm. It's so good.
I get it. And I've thought about that a lot. I'm always like, gosh, if we could just like get out of this culture and move to like Switzerland. I have been to Switzerland and it was amazing and some of the best weeks of my life. But I think that, well, no, it wasn't because it didn't have my husband or my kid involved. But I think that, gosh, wouldn't it be great to move to like this simpler way of existing that nobody gives a crap about all of these things that seem to spin in our brains on a day-to-day basis in our culture? Like, it just, yeah.
That's true. Although most people in Switzerland are quite trim. You know, it's a nation of very fit people.
Well, yeah, but I think that's for a lot of reasons that it's because of how they live, you know,
there's
kind of their stress-free lifestyle, so to speak. But, you know, Instagram's hard. It's kind of what it's controlling. It's the new Facebook, you know, my parents are on it now, and it's attracting basically all different types of people. That's kind of how things, you know, you have your early adopters and then all of a sudden you start to see your parents on it and you're like, okay, this is becoming, this is more like mainstream now. But, you know, Instagram's really hard because it is photos. You're right. It's, there are captions and words and you communicate, but you have to grab people's attention with photos. And even opening my feed right now, there is, at the top of my feed, there's a photo of a woman, and on the left side, she is, looks absolutely fine, has a very normal body, but on the left, it has more fat on it, and on the right, it's much more lean, and it's one of those before and after stories. And this woman in particular struggled with eating disorders and, well, disordered eating behaviors, and on the left, she's talking about how hard she was dieting and how much she hated her body, and when she stopped doing that, then she got this body on the right. Now, I get the message. It's a positive message. It's supposed to be body positive. It's supposed to be, let's ditch diet culture. But ultimately, what's it telling to us? You know, what's the end message? The mm-hmm. body on the left was less than, is more unworthy, looks worse than the body on the right. So the body on the right, which is more leaner, is better looking, is more attractive, is more worthy, is what we should all strive to be, right? Is more acceptable. Yeah. And so that, and this is why we have to be careful with what we let in now, but also just like, this is becoming a part of the mainstream marketing now. Companies who have no interest in actually taking care of you and your health are weaving in this like body positive-ish sort of language, and they are not actually, they're not looking after you and your health, your mental health at all. And there's the underlying message is still, you need to lose weight. And your body needs to be smaller to look better and for you to be more worthy and for you to be acceptable. And so and this is kind of why I do like having this stuff in my feed, but man, I'm seeing it now on commercials. I'm seeing it everywhere on magazines. Love the body you're in, you know, and it sounds good, but the underlying thing is always weight loss. It's always weight loss. It's always getting you smaller. It's never about mental and emotional health. Very rarely do you find articles, pictures, whatever, that posts that are truly about focusing on mental and emotional health and I know balance doesn't exist, but mental and emotional health, physical health, and looking at health from a holistic perspective and how you view your body and really, you know, truths around that, like how that is so important when pursuing health. But yeah, and that's because it's selling. Body positivity is selling. And so people are trying to weave it in, and it's still the underlying words, you know, still the underlying message is the same, exact same. Motivation is the same. Make money, get people to think that what they need to be is smaller, and sell them a product to help them achieve that. So, do you even watch TV? You do watch TV, but you watch it on your laptop.
Yeah, so I watch like, I will sit down and watch a show on my computer. I've never owned a TV, and I can't tell you the last time I like looked at a TV.
Hmm. Yep.
Yep.
Sometimes I think, you know, just if we were a culture of, it's... You know, removing yourself from a lot of that would just solve so many things. Like, you know what
Pretty
I mean?
Pretty much
like
everything.
Taking Instagram off your phone and just kind of choosing to watch Netflix or whatever, you know, things that aren't so highly, there's so many commercials and stuff. I mean, it's a lot of our exposure to this message is through marketing. And so how do marketers work? They sponsor photographs in your Instagram, or maybe they're people that you follow. They're commercials. They're on magazines. And so... Yeah, I mean, it's if you can reduce your exposure overall, you're probably going to feel a lot better about yourself because you don't have these people telling you constantly that something's wrong with you and you should feel shame and guilt for that, for whatever you have, your cellulite or we saddle bags or whatever, you know, so.
Yeah, and it's important, like, it is the advertisers, there's a lot of advertising that draws it, but that it also, like, that is the case because A, how human beings are wired, and B, like our culture has become that over time. And so it is in the advertisers, but it's everywhere. So if there are people mm-hmm. who you think are innocent because they're not trying to sell you something, like, you know, like I've mentioned before in the podcast, even just watching like a normal, like a buddy cop TV show or something, right? Mm-hmm. You're definitely like, you're going to find body image norms embedded in it. I just watched a show. I love it. I've watched all five seasons three times in my life. And the main character, like, is so overjoyed finding his, like, romantic whatever because she's so beautiful. Like, that's, like, something they talk about all the time, like, how lucky he is to be with such, he's a nerd and he finds a beautiful woman, you know? That's, like, a thing.
I know
that's
what show you're talking about.
Wait, really?
I think so.
No, you can't. This is a really obscure, it's a really obscure show that people, like, never, have never
even
heard
of. Okay, never
mind. And then he has a friend and he, like, dates somebody, but she's, like, his friend is, like, the sidekick and she's, like, a little bit bigger. Do you know what I mean? Like, these things are really subtle, but they're there. And so just, like, keep an eye out because it's, everywhere. You know?
Yeah.
Just look for it. Be on the alert. And when you're on the alert for it, when you can identify it, then it's a little bit easier to not be affected because you know what's going on there.
That is so true. That is the difference. It's being able to identify it and see, look what they're trying to do, or look at this underlying message, and then you can kind of separate. You're not as impacted by it, but you're seeing it, you're observing it, you're seeing it from an outside perspective and not necessarily letting it seep in and I don't know, take hold as a possible truth in your life or, you know,
yep,
whatever. I mean, once you see it, then you can recognize it and maybe discuss it, which happens a lot in my household. I'm like, they're doing that because of this and here's this. And do you see this underlying message? You know, and so my husband hears about it a lot. But yeah, good. Yeah, it's really interesting once you can call it out. But yeah, okay. So... things that
universal just, standard
universal standard, but also just the state of the union. I feel like we're like, and here's where we are today. Yeah, so let's get into questions, shall we?
Okay,
question number one is from Ruby. Hi ladies, love your podcast, really love the work you're doing. You've changed my mindset so much already, so thank you. My question is, will losing weight help me ovulate properly? I'm currently tracking my fertility by using the Billings method and have been doing so for a little over a year. Before this, I was on progesterone-only pill for about 4 months. At the moment, I'm currently overweight with a BMI of 29. I gained this weight very quickly in my first year of marriage. My husband and I are trying for a baby now and have been for 4 months. I want to lose weight anyway for self-confidence reasons, but I also want to lose weight so that I can have a healthy baby. At the moment, my vaginal mucus indicates that I am not ovulating, but I still have my periods. My nurse recommends losing weight, but I don't want to stress myself out too much focusing on that. She is 20 years old, knows her diet needs improvement. She tries to be paleo. I walk everywhere. I do a little bit of running and yoga. What should I do? Personally, I don't think... and personally, I don't think we have good apples in New Zealand, so I don't eat them. That's okay. We still love you.
I don't know. A lot of my apples have New Zealand stickers on them.
They're probably exported then, all of the apples.
I know. Oh, all of them. Yeah. All the world's best apples go from New Zealand to America.
Yeah. Sorry, you
America
have none.
Eats everything.
Yeah. Okay. This is true.
Okay, Ruby. So this is really interesting. Ruby talks about using the Billings method for tracking ovulation. Correct. And this is a way, it's like looking at your vaginal mucus to like see how it's changed. I'm not sure I want to say this is unreliable, but I think I would. I mean, we're not 100% certain that it's 100% foolproof way of tracking your fertility. Like it's just one. And there are many different reasons that your vaginal mucus can look a number of different ways at various times throughout your life and your menstrual cycle that can cloud your read on this. And so I would look into other ways to track your fertility because it's possible that you're actually ovulating or maybe not often, but it's definitely possible. I would – there's this book – that Noelle kind of likes called Taking Charge of Your Fertility. This is a joke, everybody. Noelle recommends it pretty much every podcast. Taking Charge of Your Fertility. Who's it by, Noelle?
That's a great question. I don't know.
Oh, okay. It's called Taking Charge of Your Fertility. It's by somebody very intelligent. And it's really widely used and it will provide you with a number of different tracking methods. You know, you can like touch your cervix because its texture changes when you ovulate. It gets like a little spongier is what they say, which is an interesting adjective, spongier. You can track your body temperature every morning because your body temperature will spike a little bit when you're ovulating. So that sort of thing. And that should hopefully round out the picture for you. If you're also really concerned, I would, you can do a home lab test of your hormone levels or go see a doctor. And they can run some stuff for you. A home test would be interesting because if you do it like a salivary, like you test your saliva instead of your blood for your hormone levels, which you can do, some of anyway, not all of them, not all of them. But you can get a little bit of a better read of what your hormones look like throughout your whole cycle. And then you might be able to see a spike when you ovulate or not. However, working with a medical professional would also help you get an outside perspective, a professional perspective on what's going on for you. What I think would be ideal would be to work with perhaps a functional medicine practitioner, somebody who really likes to get at the bottom of things, you know, what's going on for you. You listed your BMI. I don't remember if Noelle read it out loud in the question because normally she elides the numbers people share out for purposes related to what we're just talking about. But I just like, this is not a BMI to sweat, you know? I really don't think that this has any much of anything to do with what you're doing here with your fertility. If you want to lose weight, I'm not gonna stop you. I would ask, you know, you said that you gained this weight pretty quickly. I would ask if there was anything noticeably different in your health or in your fertility or in your cycles before you gained the weight compared to afterwards. If there was like a noticeable difference, then I would say, okay, you know, go ahead and see if that helps. It definitely could cause some hormonal changes for you. The body makes estrogen in fat cells. And so this could help restore a little bit of balance or what have you. I'm not going to write it off as a cause, but I would say that like looking elsewhere, first getting a really good understanding of what's going on with your menstrual cycle and your ovulation is the key. I would prioritize that. I think your exercising is great. Walking everywhere and doing so a little bit of running. That's cool. I'm down with that. I think eating really well, like a low inflammatory diet. Try to make sure it doesn't have processed foods in it because those are probably made with soybean oil or other oils that are inflammatory, but the soybean oil could help upset your hormone balance. So I would try to keep that the levels of that in your diet pretty minimal. Try and keep maybe like your processed sugar levels down a little bit. I know many people who say that that can sort of interrupt the regularity of their hormones throughout the course of the month. Or like if you're going to eat sugar, just like eat the same amount every day. Keep you regular. And I really do think that is probably where I would look first in just like having a little bit of patience. You know, these types of things take some time. I really wouldn't sweat, you know, the pill a long time ago. That was a long time ago and it was a short duration. I would instead just like really focus on these sorts of things. And if in a couple months, if you don't get any data that you like, or don't experience big gains in your ovulation or fertility, then you can look into, talk to a fertility specialist and get their opinion on, you know, whether you have some sort of underlying physiological issue or whether the person you're trying to conceive with has some sort of underlying issue in the long run, you know, all of these sorts of things. But no, I would not say that your ovulation is necessarily a weight thing.
Yeah, I would just add to that. The Billings method, I think, is, you know, is just looking at cervical mucus. And mm-hmm. like Stephanie said, it's not necessarily like a solid marker. I'd want you to do maybe one to two other things. I think tracking your temperature would be very, very insightful. So if you're tracking your temperature and you notice that technically your temperature rises slightly, I think it's by like 0.04 the day after you ovulate. So if you are tracking your temperature regularly, you'll start to see that, okay, here's my temperature, here's my temperature. This is kind of my baseline. It may vary a little bit, but boom, there's a significant, you know, increase the day after that you ovulate. And that's kind of how you can know that you're ovulating. And I would definitely work in these other strategies in combination with the cervical mucus testing. And that is where the fertility awareness method is, in my opinion, the strongest form of tracking your cycles and understanding and knowing whether that you're ovulating. I think it's relatively simple to do. You'll just have to get a specific type of thermometer. It's not expensive. And before you move on to doing any sort of testing to see whether you are ovulating or not, I would highly recommend working that temperature tracking into your cycles to see what's going on. In terms of, do you need to lose weight to ovulate? Here's the flawed thinking in this. Our society believes that losing weight is synonymous with improved health. And somehow we've gotten this idea that weight is what's causing negative health consequences in the body. To me, and what I think a lot of the research and the science is showing, is that weight is a side effect. Weight is, when you see a rapid weight gain, it's not because you're gaining. It's not because, oh, it just must be that, you know, you're eating too much and so you caused all this weight gain. And now that you have this weight on your body, now you're unhealthy. I think a body that is experiencing inflammation and is experiencing stress in certain ways, disease, a side effect of that is the weight gain. And so I don't think weight loss is all of a sudden going to cause you to ovulate if you're not. I think that pursuing healthy behaviors, pursuing like the things that Stephanie recommended, pursuing a diet that's low in inflammatory foods, that you reduce your exposure to vegetable oils and trans fats and processed sugar. And yeah, maybe you pursue more of a paleo diet or pursue more of a whole food diet and you get your sugars or your carbs from more whole food sources and walking a lot and improving your movement and improving your exercise. All of those are strategies that are going to improve your health. Whether you lose weight or not, a side effect of that is you're creating a healthier body, you are reducing stress, you are reducing inflammation, and therefore your body does drop unneeded weight that it has. But I think that we have this skewed thing in our culture where you go to the doctor and the doctor says you need to lose weight instead of, I'd like to see you improve your health by pursuing these healthy behaviors, because we know that studies have shown exercise alone improves your health, whether you lose weight or not. And in fact, your exercise levels and how much you exercise are a better marker of how long you're going to live and your overall health than weight is. And so let's not focus on the weight. Let's focus on pursuing healthy behaviors that are going to make your body a really healthy home to a baby. You know, make sure that you're eating lots of greens, you're getting lots of folate, you're eating lots of nutrient-dense foods, because once that baby is inside of you, it's going to steal all your nutrients and it needs a ton of them. And you need them as well while you're going on this pregnancy journey. And so doing anything you can do right now to make sure that your hormone levels are balanced, your cortisol levels are not, you don't have chronic cortisol, you're kind of making sure that your body is balanced, but also you have a nice healthy store of nutrients. I think that is kind of the mindset that I would take moving forward, as opposed to, well, what can I do to lose weight? Because we all know, if you're listening to this podcast, you know, if we focus on the weight, then what are we doing? We're just focusing on things that will help us drop weight, which often is very unhealthy behaviors. It's very unhealthy behaviors. So it's not about the weight. And if we're just focused on the weight, we get to a place where we are now, which is we have all these people who constantly do crash diets and fast for 2 weeks and, you know, are over-exercising, doing hours and hours of cardio and working out and taking their body through the ringer in order to lose weight, to whatever, lose the weight, to become, in quotations, healthier, to become more worthy and liked and feel less shame and guilt, because everybody focuses on this weight loss thing. So hopefully, you know, with a shift in that mindset, you can pursue healthy behaviors. You can pursue making your body a really awesome home for a child to live. And you'll definitely improve your chances of, I think, having a baby in general, you know, having that magic workout. So the person who will link to Taking Charge of Your Fertility in the show notes, the person who wrote it, her name is Toni Wechsler. So really great book.
And I just want to clarify, when Noelle was saying that, I think that weight is a symptom, and when weight comes on quickly, like, it can indicate an underlying problem. I don't think Noelle was necessarily saying that she thinks that this means that you have some sort of like huge underlying health issue that must be investigated. I would probably imagine that your lifestyle just changed a lot when you got married. And that's like totally okay. But anyway, I just, you know, don't freak out.
Yes. Yes. Thank you, Stephanie. Sometimes I'm always like, what did I say? what did I imply? This is why Stephanie's here. We love Thrive Market, and for good reason. It's an online marketplace on a mission to make healthy living easy and affordable. You can shop for thousands of different foods and natural products, including non-GMO foods and snacks, vitamins, supplements, personal care products, eco-friendly cleaning supplies, organic baby food, and more. And the best part is, you get to shop from home on your computer or with the Thrive Market app, and it's all shipped straight to your door. Their prices are 25 to 50% below retail prices because they cut out the middleman and buy straight from brands and then pass on that savings to us. In other words, for the first time in history, you can easily access wholesome alternatives to conventional products found at traditional supermarkets at the same prices or lower. We have a special offer for our well-fed women community at thrivemarket.com/well-fed-women. You can get $60 of organic groceries for free, plus free shipping, plus a free trial membership. You literally have nothing to lose, and you'll likely find many items that are already in your pantry. Go to thrivemarket.com/well-fed-women, and you can check the show notes for more information. Question number two is from Amy. First of all, congrats, Noelle, on the birth of your adorable Stella. Second, best wishes in Oxford, Steph, Team Honeycrisp. I'm a first time. I'm 35 plus 1 week pregnant. This is how moms talk about where they are in pregnancy. It's 35 plus 2 days, 35 plus 3 days. It's just what we do. I was going on a long walk daily up until yesterday when I hurt my groin. I woke up this morning all ready to do my walk, but the pain was too much. I chose not to go and instead went back to bed. That's unusual for me, as I've been active hiking, walking, swimming all throughout pregnancy to now. She has boy-girl twins. I think I said BG, but I just want to make sure everybody knew that was boy-girl. I'm used to feeling good endorphins that exercise provides. I'm a bit below the weight my doctor wanted me to be, so I know this extra rest is good. However, it's hard psychologically right now. Here are my questions. How many of you are still exercising? Any words of encouragement you can give? I'm feeling like a lazy person and disappointed in myself. I wanted to have movement all the way up until I deliver, which doctor has a goal of 38 weeks. Is it okay to literally hardly do any exercising? I'm worried I may make my groin worse if I try walking too soon. I'd like to try before I reach 38 weeks, but I probably need to take a few days off. I'm tempted to try a walk through later today. Any words of encouragement? I'm feeling like a lazy person and disappointed in myself. I wanted to have movement all the way up until I deliver, which is the doctor has a goal of 38 weeks. I think she was like writing her question and then tried to rewrite it and probably didn't delete the first part, but 38 weeks, she's 36 weeks now, hurt her groin, exercise, pregnancy. Do you want me to take this?
Well, yes, but I do want to say, I mean, the huge thing that I'm seeing here, the only thing that I'm seeing here is like, why, you know?
Yeah.
No, really, seriously, right? It sounds like you're putting a lot of pressure on yourself to be moving a lot. But I, if this is because you think it's going to like be good for your babies or, you know, facilitate your labor in some way, like, great. But if you're just like stuck in this mindset that if you're not exercising all the time, you're lazy, you know, then that's like problematic. You know, this past week I was sick and I've gotten kind of used to exercising in the mornings, and it was hard for me to wake up and be like, you know what, the best thing for you right now is to not move, you know, just like, don't do it. Sometimes the right things for our body is to rest. Often, Noelle says this all the time. So, anyway, that being said, I know Noelle would say that too. I mean, I guess Noelle would say something similar, but do go on.
Yeah, Mom. Well, I think that that is a great strategy. Ask yourself why. And I think that we've talked about this a lot before in terms of assessing your behaviors around food and fitness in general, but really dig deep and ask the questions. Ask why it is you feel this way. Who told you that you needed to work out until 38 weeks in order to be worthy? And what identity are you grabbing onto? Is it something that you want to be able to say to other people? Is it something that you perceived that you needed to do in order to stay active? Are you scared that afterwards you're all of a sudden not going to be able to work out, and so you're trying to work out as hard as you can up until you deliver? All of those things are false assumptions, by the way. You can take a year off from working out and get back into it and achieve the health level, the activity level that you once did. I do understand it, because this is the attitude that we have taken on in our society, but I just don't understand where it started. How did we decide that we needed to pressure women into working out all the time, every day, all day, and not take a day off? And it is really hard, because guess what? Instagram and all of these media sources that show us women who are pregnant, who are 40 weeks and doing a CrossFit workout. And, you know, look at us. We modified these boards so that this woman who's 39 weeks pregnant can still do burpees. And it's like, why? Why are you doing that? It doesn't make you a better person. It's probably putting more strain on your abdominal wall. Therefore, you're going to have more dysfunction in your core after the fact. You know, I get it. I get that exercise is so helpful long-term, mental, emotionally. I get it. I love walking. I love hiking. I miss it when I'm not doing it. But also, you have to take a break and you have to take rest. And sometimes we have to do things that we don't want to do in order to be there for our body and our kids and make sure that we are healthy. Yes, it is healthy to not work out. It's the healthiest thing you can do. If you have hurt your groin and you are pregnant with twins, yes, it is the healthiest decision that you can make for your body is to rest. Clearly, an injury, when you experience an injury, it is a sign that a certain area of your body has experienced too much stress, that you have somehow overtrained it. And so this injury is a sign to you that, look, you are doing too much. It is time to rest. So an injury can sometimes be a blessing in disguise, because it's your body's way of physically forcing you to slow down. But ultimately, there is nothing that you need to be doing in terms of exercise in this late third trimester that's going to make you a better person, make you more healthy. None of that. No. Right now, you need to be resting. You need to be resting up for labor. You need to be resting up for an extreme challenge of raising twins. I can't imagine the postpartum experience with twins, like two of them. God bless all of you who have twins. It's a lot. And so this question came to us a month or two ago. So obviously, this woman has had her twins now, which, congratulations, Amy. But I think that it's so important to recognize that even 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 months postpartum, you still may not be able to get back to the workouts and the things that you're doing, because your body went through a traumatic experience. Your pelvic floor is going to need some rest. Your core is going to need some rest. You might need to really go see a pelvic floor physiotherapist or physical therapist who's going to be able to help you, you know, learn how to create tension again and function again. And all of that's perfectly fine. And it is part of the health process. I think that somehow we have equated doing with health. So we have to be reducing our foods. We have to be proactively working out. We have to be going and moving to be healthy. And sometimes the healthiest thing that you can do is rest, is doing nothing. is doing nothing. And that is part, rest is part of the pursuit of health. It has to be. And resting does not mean that you are no longer healthy. Resting does not mean that you are no longer fit. Resting does not mean that you can never get fit again. And that's something that I've had to learn personally and experiment with and realize that my body is still wonderful and on my side and fighting for me. And yeah, I haven't really worked out, quote unquote, worked out in a year and a half. You know, I've been doing very specific things that are right for me, that are helping me pursue health. But yeah, no, I haven't been in the gym. I haven't been in the gym in a year and a half, and I'm a personal trainer and I have a fitness brand. So to me, and I'm fine with that. I'm fine with that because I know that I'm doing the healthiest thing for my body that I can do right now. I am focusing on sleep. I'm focusing on rest. I'm focusing on restoring my core function and getting my back and my neck healthy. And that's the best thing that I can do for my health. And guess what? In a year or two or five or maybe 10 years, I may be a regular in the gym again and I can pursue health and have a healthy body and take years off. And that is an absolute. The end. We're excited to be supported by Health IQ, an insurance company that helps health-conscious people like personal trainers, nutritionists, and those living a holistic lifestyle get lower rates on their life insurance. This is similar to how some car insurance companies can provide lower rates to good drivers. 56% of Health IQ customers save between 4% and 33% on their life insurance. This is huge as life insurance becomes so important when you have a family and kids and want to make sure they're protected and cared for long term, no matter what happens. Health IQ is the only company that has invested in gathering science and data to prove that health conscious people live longer, and it is the only place you can find special rates you deserve. To see if you qualify, go to healthiq.com/wellfed. Again, that's healthiq.com/wellfed. And you can check the show notes for more information. Question number three is from Megan. Every time you guys, aka Noelle, read all of the listener questions, I get a good laugh at how people start out their emails to you. Now I'm feeling the pressure. I love the podcast and the message you guys are spreading. My question today is about skin care. I went to the dermatologist about a year ago, annoyed with the little bumps on the back of my arms. Through some Googling, I assumed it was keratosis pilaris, and my dermatologist confirmed that. I purchased Amlactin on his recommendation. When I use it regularly, I do see slight improvements. However, I'm pretty bad about lotioning regularly, and it smells like crap, which is not encouraging me to keep it up. Do either of you have a suggestion on alternative ways to treat keratosis pilaris? I've never had face acne. My skincare routine consists of showering and sometimes washing my face arms. I recently switched every day. Coconut Fair Trade Coconut Body Wash, purchased from Thrive Market using your code. Thanks for the final push to sign up. You're so welcome. I also have, she named a couple other cleansing pads that she uses. A little bit about me. She's 30, 5'7", lifts 4 to 5 days a week, swim, run zero to one times a week, paleo-ish. Awesome. I like the zero. I swim, run zero times a week. It's 0 to 1, but I thought that was funny. YOLO, she says, wine and dark chocolate. In the morning, she takes multivitamin, magnesium fish oil, a shot of apple cider vinegar. Any vitamins, diet, etc. things. I think we have some thoughts.
I have mixed thoughts. There's actually a post on my blog that's like, it's got a very clickbaity title. It's like the solution to keratosis pilaris. I don't know. It's very clickbaity. You know, good the job, one Steph. Solution nobody ever thought of.
Yeah.
Yeah. I try. You know, it's really hard for me. Anyway, and in it, it was a post I wrote a long time ago. When I talk about vitamins A, D, and K, you know, I talk about cod liver oil. And I talk about it because these fat-soluble vitamins are really important for having healthy skin. And also because there's a lot of anecdotal stuff out there. You know, it's not studied, but there's a lot of anecdotal stuff out there that says that these vitamins can be really helpful for keratosis pilaris, all of which is to say, like, I have friends who work in the paleo sphere who swear by it. And so vitamins A, D, and K can be found in a variety of foods, but people often find that they're easiest to get if you take a cod liver oil supplement, or that's just vitamins A and D. If you want K added, back in the day, people went crazy over Green Pastures cod liver oil butter oil blend. which adds butter oil, and then you get vitamin K along with your A and D, and then you get like all the powerhouse vitamins. And people were like, oh, you know, the clouds were parting. There has since been some controversy over that, and people have sort of ramped down their enthusiasm for taking large dose fish oil type things. I still think that it's okay to take a cod liver oil. I don't think even a Green Pastures one, that brand in particular, came under fire for a while. I still think it's more likely to be beneficial than harmful. I think if you supplement with a cod liver oil, you should take a vitamin D at the same time, because there's a lot of vitamin A. And I personally have experienced that I feel like it sort of tips me closer to vitamin A than vitamin D. And so needed to be taking a D at the same time. So if you don't want to take the Green Pastures cod liver butter oil blend thing, you can also do a cod liver oil. We like fermented ones because they help protect the fats in it better. That's why Green Pastures is great. There's another company that does a fermented oil. It's called Rosita's. So take a fermented oil. If you don't want the Green Pastures one, you can also just like eat a lot of butter. That's fine. Grass-fed butter, preferably, to get your vitamin K. And then you'll be getting all of those things. I'm not 100% certain that this is like the silver bullet that's going to, you know, eradicate keratosis pilaris. I do think that consuming high-quality animal fats is important. I have noticed that since I've added 2 daily pasture-raised eggs to my diet, that my keratosis pilaris has cleared up a bit. I think it's really important for people with keratosis pilaris to decrease inflammation as much as possible. When I eat gluten, my arms get bad. Like that's kind of like one of the only symptoms that I see show up. And it's not like once, but like regularly. I do see something happen on my, I do like, it goes from being like low level, like kind of red and bumpy. And my mother, like, it's just in our family to like be really predisposed to this, to have like red arms. Everything on me is red, red face, red arms. but it goes from being like low level that to like almost like itchy, and like they become like pimples almost if I consume gluten. So keep things out of your diet that might be inflammatory or that have been inflammatory for you. So, you know, gluten, dairy if it's been bad, but if not, like high quality dairy fats, you know, something raw, something that's not low fat, like a nice grass-fed dairy fat could be really good for keratosis pilaris. I'm a really big fan of like lots of healthy fats for this sort of thing. Actually, you know, it keeps your skin. Don't cut carbs though, because carbs are also important for lubrication, but it keeps your skin nice and lubricated while keeping your keratin levels down. Also maybe like reducing some craziness on protein. I don't know if you eat like a really high protein diet, but that can also sort of help your body manage keratin production. Keep it a little bit on the lower side, which can help with this sort of thing. I know Noelle has thoughts, because she's been more successful treating her keratosis pilaris than I have been with mine. So,
well, here's the thing. It's all back now for me.
Oh, good.
Yeah. See, and I remember, it reinforces my thoughts on it even more so, is that I really think it has a lot to do with vitamin D exposure. And I do think that genetically, like our heredity and our genetics, like where our ancestors grew up, you know, were they in more sunny areas? Are you in a sunny area right now? How much are you exposed to vitamin D? How much vitamin A are you getting? Because we know vitamin A and vitamin D and K2 and all that stuff has to be in balance, which is just what Stephanie was talking about. But I had Stella in June. I had a pretty rough postpartum period, and I didn't go outside really for, I don't know, 4 or 5 months. When I started going back outside again, guess what? It was fall and winter. And so now I'm coming on the back end of winter, and it's February. And in February is typically when it gets the worst. I think it really, I have very dry skin typically, and there's really nothing that works for the back of my arms in particular. Now, I started getting this when I was a teenager, and I find that most women do start to get it in during, like, I don't know, puberty kind of area. That's like when it starts to pop up, and it's back of the arm. Sometimes it can be on the cheeks, and it's no longer on my face at all whatsoever. It was just that when I was going through puberty. But it is still on the back of my arms, and it's because I haven't been out in the sun. And honestly, when I'm out in the sun and I'm getting regular exposure to the sun and getting, you know, good, true exposure to vitamin D, I feel that it completely resolves. And I'm not saying go outside and burn. I'm just saying go outside and expose that skin, that surface to vitamin D, and make sure you're getting adequate sources of vitamin A. And I could probably be eating more liver. Right now, I have liverwurst, and I'm feeding that all to my kid. But I could definitely be eating more liver, and I think that that would help. I started taking cod liver oil regularly. And honestly, I'm still taking a prenatal. I'm taking a high-quality probiotic because I had to be on antibiotics for a short period of time. I'm taking high doses of vitamin C because sickness and the flu season and all that stuff. And so right now it's just not something I have in the budget, because it is a pretty hefty investment to do the fermented cod liver oil and or the extra virgin cod liver oil from Rosita. And that's what I was doing this past time, was the extra virgin cod liver oil. So I think that in the summer, what I'm going to do is regularly at noon-ish, I'm going to take Stella outside and sit on the porch, and we'll watch the dogs, and I'll just make sure that my upper, you know, I have a lot of skin exposure to the sun. We'll stay outside for, you know, 5 to 10 minutes and make sure that we're both getting vitamin D, and then really up my intake of liver and make sure that I am getting high quality sources of vitamin A and K2, and hopefully and supplement with cod liver oil if I feel necessary. And I think that that's kind of the magic thing. It is a fat soluble vitamin issue, in my opinion, in my experience. I do believe it is a little bit of a deficiency in fat soluble vitamins, and it's something that a lot of us get from, you know, these high quality beef products, red meat. I'm finding that I am eating less of that. I'm eating a lot of less of grass-fed beef in particular right now, just because we're waiting on our farm. Like, we had to find a farm, and now I'm waiting on I ordered a bunch, and the delivery doesn't come for another couple weeks. And so I don't really necessarily trust a lot of the grocery store meat. And so we're doing a little bit less fattier cuts. And so that's impacted, you know, my overall health. And I do believe that I'm probably eating a higher like, my diet is a little bit more processed because I am eating more bars. I am eating more crackers and stuff like that. Almond butter, as opposed to eating these whole more nutrient dense foods. And that's because of the phase of life that I'm in right now. So I think a lot of those things play into skin conditions, specifically keratosis pilaris. So hopefully that gives you some insight into, you know, maybe some other things you can do, strategies that you can experiment with. I would really try, maybe take a picture and see what changes it, because it is hard. It's one of those hard things that to assess, like, is it getting better or is it not? And I would give it a good 30 to 45 days. So if you're going to take cod liver oil, make sure you take it for 30 to 45 days before you really assess whether it's working. If you're going to go outside and try to expose your skin to sunlight, make sure you're doing that pretty consistently and regularly for, you know, over a month before you assess, like, is this working? Is this doing something? So, yeah.
Yeah. And I want to second that. It's been the case for me that in the summertime, my keratosis pilaris is better. And I think that that's a thing that people talk about on the internet. Interestingly, some people will say that the problem is that in the wintertime, people wear sleeves, and in the summertime, people don't. And wearing sleeves will like create an environment that like clogs your pores. I've heard that argument before. That's valid, but I definitely think that the vitamin D is probably much more significant. So anyway,
potentially a combo of two. All right, that's it from us for this week. Thanks for hanging out with us, listen to our banter and our questions. We're going to hopefully have some guests on soon to increase the knowledge on this podcast. We have some great guests coming up, so stay tuned for all the fun things. We're happy you're here, and we will. Oh, so I have more things to say. More from Stephanie. Go to paleoforwomen.com. More from me. Go to coconutsandkettlebells.com. Follow us on the Insta @wellfedwomen. We will talk to you next week.